Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a player who plays all over the world and goes by the handle Vagabond. Vagabond, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much.
You were on here recently, and we didn't get through all of your notes. And there's some really interesting things in here, which we haven't discussed yet. So you're back. Before you were a full-time AP, you were a computer programmer. And you used that to do an offbeat sort of AP in coupon work. How did that work?
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to say this story sort of reminds me of Pudding Guy. And for listeners who don't know who Pudding Guy is, you can Google that, and he has a Wikipedia page. But so anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Well, while I was working for the National Security Agency, I had a few part-time jobs on the side, and one of them was, you know, one of my interests was extreme couponing. I saw the TV show, so I got interested in, you know, coupon clipping, and quickly realized that, you know, it's a lot of manual labor just to save a few cents. And so I looked more into digital coupons, like the one-time use with a printed, you know, UPC code. And I found a promotion with Lowe's, which is the home improvement store.
Yes.
So it was a 10% coupon on up to $10,000 purchase that anybody can use just off the street. And contractors would love to use these coupons in the store because they'd get 10% rebate off of the retail price, at least. And even my own mother, she was begging me for a coupon when she was buying a new refrigerator. And it's like, oh, sure. I was handing them out like candy. But I had found...
That's no way to make money for you.
Well, I quickly got into selling the coupons on eBay. And then over time, I realized that the real money could be made instead of dealing with a bunch of eBay customers. I was wholesaling to the other eBay sellers because I could get them for much cheaper and faster. And so my cost per coupon was 1/7 of a cent, which was the price I paid for the CAPTCHA solvers. So everything was automated, but it required a unique email address and fill out a form. And I would, near the end of it, I would just sell them in bulk for a quarter each. And this went on for
25 cents.
25 cents,
and they're worth $1,000 to a contractor.
Up to $1,000. And
well, contractors generally have, there's a contractor's rate. If you are a contractor in the city of a Lowe's, you already get some percent off. I mean, veterans get 10% off. So there's a number. I think that's what the contractors get anyway. So the contractors actually is probably not worth anything.
Yep.
Well, but the public, yes.
Well, these you know, gray market coupons would sell for about $5, at most $5, usually at least a couple dollars online. And they'd sell them in bundles. And, you know, I was going through, you know, it was probably millions of these coupons. And it was much easier dealing with 10 wholesale customers than, you know, thousands of retail customers.
I didn't realize you generated millions of them.
Yeah. So this project went on for a few years, and by the end of
that's
it,
that's a lot of email addresses.
Yeah. I had netted about $200,000 when the promotion ended, so I was selling a ton of coupons, and just every Monday I'd send out these PDF files, and it was a lot of fun while it lasted. But nothing lasts forever, and it just dawned on me that this is very similar to, you know, working the a casino's marketing department is just another company's marketing department. They I'm sure they hated me, but
well, surely you did more than just Lowe's.
Yes, I would, after running that promotion, I'd have, you know, these millions of Hotmail accounts at my use. So I would reuse
millions of Hotmail accounts.
Yeah, I would reuse these email accounts to sign up for other promotions. One company was Kellogg's. They have the Kellogg's Family Rewards, where it's these in the in the boxes of cereal. They'd give you these one-time use promo codes, but they'd also, if you sign up, they would email you free points, which are kind of worthless, you know, just small cents each. But what's interesting is if you had a script to log in to each of these email accounts and collect the emails, you can combine all these free coupon codes and load them up onto one account and then redeem those for free Starbucks gift cards and movie theater tickets. And so I do that, and I would get free Starbucks gift cards, and then I would do another promotion with Starbucks. So then have the birthday drink. So I go in with a paper printout of my gift card that I registered, and then I'd have a rolling birthday. And so I'd alternate between different Starbuckses and say, oh yeah, I've got my birthday reward, or I'm here to collect use my $5 gift card. It's just a lot of fun.
But $5 at a time or one coffee at a time is not a way to make a lot of money.
No, but it's definitely saved me a lot of money. It's my addiction.
If you're going to Starbucks every day and it's always free.
And
if it's all automated, I get that. So it sounds like this is an advantage play that still would be available if someone is a computer programmer and is willing to dig around the internet to find the right kind of coupons.
Yeah, not so much with Lowe's or Kellogg's anymore, but you could probably find Lowe's coupons out there on eBay still. I just don't know where to source them. Back in the day, it was very simple, and other people, they were just hand typing and filling in the forms by hand, so it was wasting so much time. I had another promotion I ran. It wasn't my promotion. It was with Walgreens. It was they wanted to encourage healthy behaviors. So they had a promotion where you'd log in and you record how many daily steps or miles or you would walk or run, and they would reward you at the end of the month with a $1 gift card. But you can only spend it when it amassed to, I think, $5. So you had to wait 5 months for it to be worth something. But then you can walk into the Walgreens and type in your phone number and zip code, and then it would automatically deduct from your bill. And I slowly started ramping up creating new accounts, just a few thousand each day, and just kind of snowballed. And every month, each one of these accounts would be walking. And then after...
But different random numbers of steps and miles.
They would maximize the benefit. But by the end of the... after a year and a half, I had I had accrued about just over $1 million in Walgreens points, but they were in... They were in $25 increments, so I'd have to go in and, I could...
You couldn't wholesale those?
No, eventually they caught on, and, they canceled all the accounts.
So many Walgreens stores in your area.
Right. But I had to plan on, maybe making routes and buying the 5-hour energy drinks and maybe wholesaling those, because those are pretty valuable. But thankfully it never got to that level, and I found better uses of my time. But it was fun. It was really fun at the end.
He was in Senegal looking for where's the local Walgreens.
Right. That's it. Now, there's a lot of your AP play could benefit from being a good computer programmer. Do you ever apply your computer programming to gaming applications?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a good computer programmer. I can figure it out. This was pretty simple, as using iMacros and some JavaScript. Before that, I programmed in Visual Basic and just very. If there's a task that needs to be done, I can figure it out, but it may take me three times as long as somebody should. So it's something I may get into down the road, but for the time being, I've friends I work with, and I trust their numbers, and it saves me a lot of free time.
One of our other guests a couple of years ago was playing in Colombia, and he said they would have to hire armed security guards to take him from casinos to his hotel. Do you have any fears for your life security wise in your travel?
No, not at all. I think a lot of it is probably in your head. I mean, there's obvious, you obviously have to be safe, you know, anywhere you go with, you know, carrying cash and being seen in a casino, betting a lot of money, especially when it's multiple, you know, many multiples of what the locals make, you know, monthly. But I've been traveling for over 20 years. I've spent many, many years overseas, and, you know, when I've never encountered any life-threatening issues, never been mugged. The worst thing that's happened to me is I had a cell phone stolen. So I just, you know, it's not that bad. But I've had friends in the past who seems like everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. They've lost their passport, their wallets. And I kind of believe a lot of that is just, you know, this person's personality. Like, he maybe isn't as attentive as he should be, or maybe drinks too much, or, you know, leaves his belongings, you know, just readily available on the beach to be stolen. You know, when I leave a casino after winning a lot of money, I try to zigzag my patterns and make sure nobody's following me. But, you know, it's never happened before.
You know, when I, in the late 80s, I was spending a lot of time in Korea. And at that time, there was a lot of rioting going on with the students. And it would make the network news back in the United States, these riots between the police and the students in Seoul. And people would say, how can you go there? It's so dangerous. Oh, my God, you're crazy. But I never felt unsafe there. And I just think that people, especially people who don't travel, they're just afraid of what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And many foreign places, I feel far safer walking the city than I do in cities in the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, a big part of that is because they don't have guns, you know. But yeah, I find most foreign places to be safer than the U.S.
Yeah, I was just recently in Tijuana, right next to the caravan, all the Hondurans.
The caravan,
and,
yeah.
And it's funny, on the news, you see a certain perspective, and, you know, and I didn't dare tell my family until I returned, because, you know, they're watching Fox News and seeing all the violence, and I thought they'd have a heart attack if they, because I was taking an Uber down the street and talking to the taxi driver, asking about the caravan people. And he said, oh yeah, they're all over here, and just pointed to the right. And, you know, I was, you know, I thought my father especially would have a heart attack if he was watching the news and saw me in the background. It's like, what were you doing in Mexico? Especially that part. But,
right. And then you get arrested as a terrorist for you know, talking to the caravan people.
Yeah. Well, whenever there's, you know, protests going on, you just don't want to be part of it and just stay far away from that, because, you know, you don't want to get wrapped up in whatever's, you know, it's not our issue anyway. So.
All right. Thank you, Vagabond. We appreciate your additional insights.
Thank you very much.
The Vagabond episode did not cover the full hour, obviously. So it's time for Richard and I to go into our mailbox. There was one online article from the New Jersey Online Gambling about a game called Ocean Magic, which was a windfall for players for about a week. Richard, what do you know about this?
Well, you know, as the article states, an enterprising player signed up for an online casino in New Jersey, and they have this Ocean Magic machine. This is a machine that a lot of the players are playing here in Las Vegas and other venues, in live casinos. And it's one of those machines that has more than one state. So in this particular machine, there's some wild symbols that come up, and after they've come up, they can stay on the machine for a while, for another spin or two or three or whatever. And, you know, so depending on how many wild symbols there are and where they're placed, you can have an edge, you know. And if a tourist or somebody walks away from the machine and leaves it in the state. And this player found that the machines, when you signed up for an online casino, had this state on the first spin that you had. And
for any denomination.
Yes, for any denomination. And the denominations went all the way up to $3,000 a spin.
Oh, sweet.
And then he found that it wasn't just one casino. It was all 13 online casinos. And so apparently he brought in a number of other players and they played it and won over $1 million. And now, you know, the age-old story, how do casinos cheat? Do casinos cheat? No, they just refuse to pay you when they lose. And no surprise that Borgata is one of the ones that they're having trouble with, since I think they were emboldened over the Phil Ivey ruling. And so now I think as of now, they've received most of the money. Everyone seems to agree they did absolutely nothing wrong. They did nothing illegal. But, you know, the casinos are slow paying. So I would think eventually they will get all the money out, but I'm sure they're looking around for every possible weaselly thing they can do to try to avoid paying all of it. But, you know, good on him for finding an opportunity. I mean,
bad on him for not knowing my phone number. I could have gone to New Jersey.
Right, right. So, yeah, no, it was a good play, and hope they get all the money.
Do you know any people involved? Would they likely be wanting coming on the air and brag about it a little bit?
Oh, I doubt it. I actually do know the player who found it and had heard about this story before it hit the news. And, and I had asked him about coming on the show in the past, and he was someone who had declined. And the only reason I think he went to the media over this was I'm guessing that he felt like this would put some pressure on the casinos. Remember, this is not an online casino that can get away with just stiffing players. This is New Jersey, where there's a gaming commission, and the gaming commission should be doing something about this. So, and I think this is a strategy that is underemployed. In the past, I've often thought that getting the media involved in some of these stories might help. An example of this is this law in Louisiana where they passed a law that said that they're not allowed to bar card counters in Louisiana, and the Louisiana casinos are just flouting the law. So what do you do about this? And there has been a little bit of media attention, but my thought would be to get more media attention would be something that would be a good thing for, you know, to put pressure on the casinos down there.
So a skilled Louisiana card counter who might want to contact gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, they might find a forum.
Well, yeah, but, I think another really good strategy would be to try to find somebody who knows a popular television personality in Louisiana, or a state representative or senator or something like that. Teach them how to count cards, or try to take them out on a play and let them get barred. And, you know, somebody who actually has a voice that matters. And, you know, because when you get people like that involved, they kind of take it personally. Like, hey, what the hell is going on? They're not supposed to be able to do this. And it matters a lot more if you get a state senator who feels that way than you or I.
That's probably true. You and I would be speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir. All right, moving on. There was a United States Supreme Court ruling recently that limited civil forfeiture to some degree. That'll be the first question we put to Bob Nersessian next time he's on the show, which likely will be soon. But first, we need more questions. Please send us questions for Bob Nersessian at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com.
Right. And I'll post about this on Twitter and Facebook, but you can always find us on facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can find me on Twitter at RWM21.
Okay. Next question. This one's to Richard. I love the show and love to share your knowledge. Richard, you've talked about the two-pass method numerous times. What is it?
The two-pass method?
Presumably with shuffle tracking.
Well, so two-pass usually refers to a type of shuffle. So, and usually I am not a fan of tracking two-pass shuffles. So, yeah, I'm not sure what the question is, actually. If the question is, should I try to track a two-pass shuffle, my recommendation would be no. But can you find a one-pass shuffle? They're, you know, about as rare as hen's teeth these days. So I think the listeners should send us a follow-up with kind of more detail in the question.
Yeah, maybe just knowing that it's shuffle tracking and a two-pass is tough and a one-pass is easier but non-existent might be enough to answer that question.
Yeah, not totally non-existent, but at least in the United States. Much harder to find in the United States.
Okay. Next question. Can you guys help me find some literature to take advantage of hole carding Ultimate Texas Hold'em?
Wow. well, the definitive work is in a book called Exhibit CAA by James Grosjean. That book is very difficult to find.
And expensive when you do find
it. And expensive, yeah. But I, you know, I think there is some kind of a dumbed down strategy on Wizard of Oz. I'd have to double check that, but I believe there is some kind of hole card strategy on Wizard of Oz for Ultimate Texas Hold'em.
Yeah, there's at least the basic strategy there.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. An Indian tribe in Alabama is offering a $75 to $1,000 loss rebate on a player's first day of play.
Did you say Alabama?
That's what the question said. Are there many Indian casinos in Alabama?
Well, okay, go on.
Player wants to know if we would consider that worth playing, assuming we lived in the area.
Oh, I'd absolutely play it, and I may go play it anyway. First of all, I didn't realize that there were casinos in Alabama, and if so, maybe they're slots only. But yes, I would definitely consider playing that. Yeah.
Okay. As would I, but last I checked, Alabama was not next door to Nevada.
Las Vegas, yeah.
I've heard a lot of podcasts from you guys that occasionally hear of a card counter that says something along the lines of, sometimes you find a casino in the middle of nowhere.
Like Alabama.
That's never heard of card counting, and so there's no heat. If that's the case, why do these players not stay in that casino forever? Do they eventually get too much heat for winning so much?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I mean, the one thing it's very hard to hide is winning. So eventually, yes, there's no heat in the beginning, but everybody has a threshold, a pain tolerance, and eventually you're going to cross it. So they realize, boy, this guy's been here for 3 weeks and he's up hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever the number is. And yeah, eventually they figure it out. They call somebody or something and they realize, oh, well, I guess we have to bar this guy.
And that's any casino game.
Yeah, that's not just card counting. That is, as Bob just said, that could be any casino game.
Yeah, if you keep showing them that you can do it, they will take counteractions. Sometimes they'll figure out what you're doing, and sometimes they won't, but they will get rid of you.
Yeah. And you know, I tell people this, and they just don't believe it. They're like, oh, well, they would never throw somebody out for playing, you know, roulette or slot machines. But yes, in fact, in Las Vegas, it's happening every day these days. They're throwing people out for playing slot machines. So any game, you will get thrown out if you win enough.
There's good reason for the slot machine. But
And they do throw out people who have no edge at all, who just happen to get lucky for a period of time.
Yeah, Palace Station, I was talking to I was in South Point last night. They had a player party, And I was talking to a guy at the table I was at who used to be my host at Palace Station years ago before Palace Station invited me not to play there anymore. And he said they continue to kick out people. They recently, there's this big losing player, but he got up $50,000 recently on Baccarat, which is a coin flip kind of a game. And they kicked him out. More than just kicked him, 80-60, more than just took away privileges. So,
wow.
They, okay.
You know, the casino industry is one industry that is so strong, they make money in spite of themselves. Right? I mean, it's amazing you can run a business that way and still make money. It just shows you how strong the edge is in gambling.
Yeah, and they keep changing. Like the M Casino recently kicked out a boatload of people. They were offering games that were way too loose, and they just removed a lot of the players. And then for some reason, their handle went down by 40%, so they let most of these players back in again. So they have no idea what they're doing down there. They still haven't let me back in, but I'm not expecting that phone call soon. But they clearly don't have a clue down there. Okay, another question. In one casino, penetration was about a deck, and they used an 8-deck shoe. In another, penetration was 1.5 to 2 decks, but they used a 6-deck shoe. All other conditions being the same, which of those casinos would the EV be higher?
Well, as I've said many times on the show, if you're going to count cards in any way seriously, you have to get Casino Verite software. This is a question that you can plug into that software, and it'll answer it very quickly and tell you exactly which one is better. Off the top of my head, I would suspect that the 8-deck game cut 1 is much better than the 6-deck game cut 2. 6-deck cut 1.5, I don't know. I'm not sure. But yeah, if you want to know, just get that software and plug it in, it'll tell you.
And it depends on how big your spread is and all kinds of things.
Yeah, but I'm assuming the same spread for both games.
Okay.
Oh, I want to point out one other thing.
Yes.
You know, the other factor is, so the three important factors are penetration, the size of your bet spread, and the mistake that a lot of players make is they think the rules are really important. The rules are less important to penetration, the size of your bet spread, and the game speed. So if you can play the 8-deck game heads up, or the 6-deck game that has 3 or 4 other players at the table, well, then the heads up, or vice versa, the heads up game is always going to be way better than the game that has 3 or 4 other players at the table. So that's the other thing you really need to take into consideration.
It's a player who's found there's going to be 2 days coming up where one of the casinos near him pays 2-for-1 for natural suited blackjacks. Is that worth a special trip?
2-for-1? You mean 2-2-1?
Yes, I said that wrong. Thank you. 2-to-1 for natural suited blackjacks. Since Richard gets to answer most of the blackjack questions, I'm going to preempt him this time. Ha ha ha.
Great.
A double blackjack returns 2.27% more than 3-to-2 blackjacks, and 1 in 4 blackjacks are suited. So this adds about 0.57 to whatever the base game was, which you'll have to calculate for yourself.
Right. But assuming it's a 6-deck game with hit 17, the game is now basically about break even off the top. So, yeah, I mean, again, assuming you're not in Oklahoma where they're charging you an ante to play every hand or something. And yeah, you know how to count cards. I mean, is it worth playing if you're a basic strategy player? Well, probably not. But yeah, I mean, it's a much better game than you would normally get to play.
But everybody else thinks it's a much better game, too. And so you might have pretty full tables.
True.
Someone wants to know if they play 9-6 jacks or better. what would it take in terms of bankroll and bet size, quarters, dollars, etc., to make 10 to 20 bucks an hour? Also, since he said Jacks Are Better does not pay 100%, what does he look for in terms of slot benefits or comps to get to 100%?
Now, since Bob normally answers all the video poker questions, I'm going to let him answer this one, too.
change up. In order to do the calculation you set out, you also need to know the number of bets per hour. An 800 hands per hour player bets twice as much as a 400 hands per hour player. The game itself pays 99.54% if you play it perfectly. It isn't hard to play it perfectly compared to other video poker games, but it's not trivial. Now that means unless the slot club pays more than 0.46%, you're not the favorite at all. Most casinos return less than 0.46%, at least for low denomination, so it's likely you're not going to find a game where you have any edge. Let's take the South Point for an example. On a single point day, it returns 0.3%, which means on double point days, it returns 0.6%, giving you a game worth 100.14%. Assuming you play quarters, 800 hands per hour, that's $1,000 bet per hour, a 100.14% game means you're earning $1.40 per hour if you're playing perfectly. They do have $2 single line games, meaning you're betting $10 per hand, which is 8 times as much. That'll get you to $11.20 per hour, which barely meets your criteria. You will have $8,000 royal flushes periodically that has tax consequences. Keep in mind that we calculated this on double point days, of which there might be 4 or 5 per year. On single point days, you're short of 100%, unless you find some extra value somewhere, which is possible. You get monthly majors, although they might well be $10 a week or so for video poker players who plays $400,000 a month. That's 0.1%, which will add another 80 cents per hour in the example. They also have other promotions going on. The February promotion just ended had casino-wide progressives. The one in March, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes, gives additional mailer money, assuming you already get mailers and are willing to go in extra times. Comps are good, but they're not the same as cash. It's hard to value a room. Meals are much more easily valued. Days of getting airfare reimbursement are usually non-existent for the stakes we're talking about. The variance of single line Jacks Are Better is 19.5, which is as low as video poker variance gets. If you have the Video Poker for Winners software, you can run short-term and long-term bankroll calculations. For example, let's assume you have a starting bankroll of $1,000. And you're going to play dollars for 10,000 hands, which means $50,000 coin in, whether that, however long it takes you. You know the average loss will be $230. That's what a 99.54% game means, offset by either $150 or $300 in slot club cash, depending on single or double point days. Seems like a $1,000 bankroll will be more than enough because you're only supposed to be losing $230. But with all that, 65% of the time, you're going to be behind at least $1,000 at some point along the stretch. Many times you're also going to win. Returning to the software, you can run it with several different scenarios and get an idea of what it's going to take. It's something you need to get a feel for. If you're always playing the same game, you get a feel for good days and bad days. If you switch between games, they're quite a bit different. Double-double bonus, much bigger ups and downs than Jacks Are Better. And people who want to make $10 to $20 in video poker, this is not a paycheck. There's going to be many months where you lose. If you're looking, this is not at all the same as a paycheck. But it is possible to find advantages in that game and in video poker. It's just not going to be on a regular basis. All right. Someone sent a question in for Griff, who was a surveillance guest we had on a few months ago, and he was very good. What he wanted to know from Griff is there a threshold that a blackjack player cashes out where the pit would notify surveillance? If so, is it based off winnings or total cash out? What is that threshold, and what does surveillance do with that information? I don't know how Griff would answer that question.
The one thing I would say is yes, there is a threshold where the pit is going to call surveillance. So, but every casino is going to have a different number. You know, there's also a threshold where the shift manager has to be notified. There's a threshold where the casino manager has to be notified. So, yeah, and every casino, it's different. I mean, I've told this story on the air before, but I was playing in a casino. I was betting two hands of $900, and the pit boss walked by, and he kind of did a double take, and he said, the limit was 1,000. And he said, are you betting the limit? And I said, no, it's 900, two hands of 900. He goes, oh, okay, because if you bet the limit, I have to call surveillance. I was like, oh, yeah, no, I never bet that much, you know. Now, what was funny is
it was just an accidental that you bet 900.
Yeah, so two hands of 900, $1,800 he doesn't have to call, but one hand of 1,000 he does. And in the same casino, there was a carnival game with a $25 max, and they had to call surveillance every time somebody bet $25 on that game. You know, I mean, think about what surveillance must think. Oh, a guy's betting $25, you know, on this carnival game. So,
and if he's dealing 200 hands an hour, and he's betting 25 on each hand, do they have to call him 200 times?
First of all, you'd never get 200 hands in a carnival game, but not even, you know, sometimes 10% of that is what they're getting. But no, once they alerted him, this player bets the limit, then, you know, then they've fulfilled their obligation. But anyway, so yeah, as I say, every casino is different, but often they have to be notified if somebody bets table max.
And it can also vary within a casino depending on which weekend of the year. In Vegas, whether it's New Year's Eve or Super Bowl weekend or big fight weekends, sometimes rules get shaded because the place is just so crowded and right. So busy. And there's some legal requirements. Cashing out for more than $10,000 requires some paperwork. And
$2,500 usually requires ID in most places to cash out.
At some at the Silverton, if you cash out a slot ticket of more than $1,200, you have to show ID.
Yeah, and some of the coast casinos, every $500 chip, they have to call the pit. You have to tell them what game you were playing and what pit, and they have to call the pit for one $500 chip.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone else wrote in. The other night, another blackjack player was approached by the pit and told that surveillance had caught the dealer paying a $500 bet when, in fact, the player had lost the hand. The error had apparently happened a while back, but had just been caught. The pit asked the player for two purple chips, which he unquestionably handed to the dealer. No argument, no asking for details, nothing. What would you have done in the player's shoes? Just handed over the $1,000 because they ask? Is he under a legal obligation to pay back the misplay? It was at an Indian casino. I guess the question boils down to this. When the house overpays the player, who owns these chips? The player or the house? Do you want to go first or second?
Oh, you can go first.
I've had this happen to me in both video poker and blackjack. In all cases, I knew exactly what the casino was talking about, and they were right. So I paid. If I thought they were wrong, I probably would have asked to see the tape or something. My general rule is if they don't catch their error, and if an individual person won't be responsible for making up the loss, I keep overpayments. If a particular cashier has to make up for the loss, I'll repay any discrepancy I get. A person working for $12 an hour needs the money more than I do.
Yeah, my answer is almost exactly the same. Usually, if there is an overpayment, I'm aware of it. Sometimes, depending on the game and how good the game is, I will correct it before they even give it to me, especially if there's a boss nearby watching, because that'll kind of put me in favor with that boss. And he'll see I'm not somebody trying to take a shot at him, when actually I am there taking a shot at him, but just not in the way he thinks. So, yeah, so often I will correct the mistake when it happens. If other situations where if the game is not as good, the edge is smaller, whatever, I won't. I'll just accept the money. But if they ask for it back, I would just give it back. And like you, if I thought they were wrong, or if I had not seen the mistake happen when it happened, then I would ask to see the tape. Now, in an Indian casino, I mean, a lot of times they're going to say, oh, we can't show it to you or whatever. Well, now you have to decide whether it's worth getting thrown out of the casino over whatever the amount of money is, right? Because if you just refuse, yeah, they're probably going to throw you out. They may refuse to cash your chips. I mean, in an Indian casino, they can just take your money. Who knows, you know? But yeah, I would definitely ask to see the tape if I hadn't been aware of the error. But it sounds to me like the player knew about the error if he just handed the money over with no question.
Yeah, it's if you get paid on a $500 when you weren't supposed to be, that makes a big enough impression on you that you. Yeah, there have been times back when I was a blackjack player where when they did not have rules about late entry and you could just sit down and play halfway through a shoe. And so if I were sitting down at first base or something and the dealer was in mid hand, but had already gone on to second or third position, I'll just put out my bet for the next one. And there have been times when the dealer busts and pays everybody, including me, where they didn't have any cards on the table, but they still paid me. I just put it in my stack, kept going.
Yep. Pretty common.
All right. Let's do a commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In March, the promotion will be for players who've already received mailers. Instead of getting your usual amount of free play four times, Tuesdays through Thursdays, you pick up free play Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and if you do, you get an identical amount Friday or Saturday of the same week. Pick up all 8 free play offerings, and you'll get another one twice as big on Monday, April 1st. No fooling. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Peek and Play Poker. This is a 7 coins per line game where you get to see the first card off the pack of 47. How you get to 47 is those 52 cards in the deck and you're dealt 5 and there's 47 left. You must take that card, assuming you don't hold all 5 original ones. Let's say you're dealt ace, king, queen, jack of spades and a red 4. In normal video poker, you hold all 4 spades, say a prayer, and hope for a royal. Here, you just hold the ace because you know another ace is coming first, and the new ace will be paired up by the first ace in the deck, and hope for the best. You'll have to work out the strategy on your own. This is one of the games constructed in the era where they did not create games that paid more than 99%. That era has ended, but some of these games are still out there. So it's a rare promotion that this will be your best choice of games. All right. Another question on, this one's on video poker. Kind of a long question. I'm sure this question has been asked in some form before, but from a casino's perspective, if they're not going to make the availability of good or loose poker games a selling point, such as the South Point does, why do they choose to randomly sprinkle the machines in with good pay schedules throughout the casino floor, often within larger banks of worse machines? Just cannot understand why a casino would make players look through the whole casino just for the few good games. All right.
A casino like that, I'm surprised they have any good games at all, right? I mean...
Well, a lot of casinos have some good games. Sometimes the slot director doesn't know where they are, which is also interesting. Now, every slot director has his own logic for how and why he does things. The South Point has a lot of good machines, and they're scattered. Very few casinos put signs up saying where the good machines are, and some that do it. The station does optimal play, and it costs you four times as much to get a point here, and better not hope for a mailer because you're not going to get one if you play here, something like that. So they do have they do put stickers on the machines, and when they do that, they tend to group them all together. But each casino has its own way of doing things. Were I a slot director, I would likely spread them out. If a player comes in, I want to, without being knowledgeable, I would rather he find a tight machine than a loose machine. Because even bad players do better on loose machines than good players do. All right, here's a blackjack. A player recently received his first back-off at the El Cortez, of all people, all places.
A rite of passage.
A rite of passage, yeah. If you can't get backed off from the El Cortez, you cannot call yourself any kind of a blackjack player.
Right.
The player was sitting at a double-deck game with a couple of friends. He was only playing the positive counts for $50 to $100, and the count went south. He'd pretend to be distracted, bored, or superstitious. He wasn't asked to leave, but they told him, no more blackjack. I wasn't playing rated, and they don't know the name, but based on our exchange, I imagine the pit boss won't forget my face for a while. He has a clean name and plans on keeping it that way, but my girlfriend loves the El Cortez and wants to stay there. I would consider getting a new girlfriend. That was just me. Now, the player says he's gone in a couple weeks. Is it a bad idea to book a room under my name? Other than absolutely, what else would you say, Richard?
I would say if she really wants to stay there, book it under her name. Don't put it under your name. Put it under her name. Problem solved.
Problems, and don't play blackjack there.
And don't play blackjack, yeah. I mean, you should be fine. I mean, they told you you're not 86, so there's no problem you being there, eating in the restaurant, staying in the hotel. So, yeah, just means you have to pay for the room. Or, you know, if you know how to play video poker, your girlfriend could get a card, and you could play some video poker and maybe get it comped.
Could be.
And it just shows you, you know, people think they have these wonderful acts, you know. I'm acting distracted. I'm pretending to be drunk. I'll sit out these hands. That stuff is not going to buy you much, you know. You're just going to get backed off.
We got an email for Richard wanting to know if he was playing a blackjack tournament at the El Dorado in Reno. Now, this was at the time when he was out of the town playing a secret game. Now, I did not think the game was in Reno, but I can't know for sure. Richard, were you playing a blackjack tournament recently at the El Dorado in Reno?
No, sorry, it wasn't me.
Some other handsome dude, huh?
Yeah, some other incredibly good-looking guy with a great voice. Yeah, but no, actually, at the time, I was on a plane at the time that, that was taking place. And normally I do not play tournaments because, well, you have to give them your name. And the kind of people who play in tournaments might recognize my voice and say something that would not be good for me if the people running the tournament heard it. So, yeah, I really don't play tournaments.
Well, he said the big tip-off was you were slamming Red Bull and vodka. I'm going...
There you go. I'm a scotch drinker, so...
Okay. A player says he finds himself making holding errors in video poker due to sticky buttons. He wants to know if when I encounter this and you run into a speed versus accuracy trade-off, any tips on dealing with sticky buttons? Have I ever passed on a play or otherwise changed my game due to sticky buttons? And the answer is absolutely. If there's an equivalent machine nearby, I'll move. If this play is the only one machine and the buttons stick, I'll call a slot attendant over and ask them to fix it. They usually can pour club soda or something over it or change the switch. But if they can't fix a machine or they won't fix it, I'll usually not play. There was one exception to this where I was in a video poker tournament and they used bar top machines. Now, bar top machines are notoriously sticky because drinks get spilled on a bar top machine more often than other places. There was one round after 1 minute of a 5 minute round, I raised my hand and said the buttons were just too unplayable. I asked to be moved, and I was moved. In the second round of the same tournament, I was lucky enough to get four deuces with a kicker early, and the buttons were sticky. I shut up and gutted it out, because in this case, changing machines would have hurt me, not helped me. So you can be selective in when you move in this.
But, why would changing machines have hurt you?
Oh, because... four deuces and a kicker is 800 coins bonus.
You wouldn't have got to keep the coins.
Right. You have to start over again.
Oh, yeah.
A player just started learning how to count cards in a casino. A while ago, he was in the Reno and Tahoe area playing blackjack.
And I wasn't there.
He wasn't there drinking Red Bull and vodka. So... player went to a small casino with good rules for a double game. He has a small bankroll of 2,000, so he's playing at low stakes and a small bet spread 5 to 30. Playing over an hour, doing well. The table was almost full, and this local guy sat down with $40 and knew the dealer really well. For the next 23 hands, this guy could not lose and was tipping the dealer nicely. Just about everybody else was losing. I was in third base, trying to see if the dealer was dealing from the bottom or second off the top. Something just didn't seem right. Left the casino trying to figure out what happened. Is he just being paranoid? Do dealers still cheat? Is this something I should be concerned about? Let's say the dealer was cheating for his friend. Is this something that an AP player could use to his advantage, or should they just run for the hills? Richard?
Well, first of all, yes, dealers still cheat. That still happens all the time. But think about this. If you were a dealer and you were going to have a friend come in and you were going to cheat and give that player money, would you act like you were really good friends and knew each other really well? I certainly wouldn't. So I think the guy probably just got lucky. I would not worry about it much. I mean, I have talked to different dealers have different thoughts about this idea that if I'm dumping off money to my agent, that's what it's called when you have someone come in and the dealer cheats to dump off money to him. Some dealers feel like if I'm dumping off money to an agent, then I have to make up for that loss somewhere else so I will cheat the other players. But other dealers that I've talked to who were cheats said that they would never do that because it means now they have to do twice as much cheating. So they're twice as likely to get caught. So they would never cheat the players just because they're dumping off to their agent. So cheating of players just because dealers want to do it does happen, but it's really, really, really rare. So I would just not worry about it, or if you are overly paranoid about it, then just play shoe games, and then you don't need to worry about it.
But some degree of paranoia is healthy in general.
Yeah, sure.
Also, if you're dumping off to an agent, you probably would want that agent starting with more than $40.
Yes.
It's just as easy to cheat for $500 a hand as it is for $40 a hand, and you have to do it a lot fewer times. Last question, which means that you guys got to send in more questions, because next time we do this show, we're going to need to do some more. And so somebody wanted to know if we had any thoughts of putting out a CD of the greatest gambling songs. Maybe the gambling community could vote on this. And my comment is, this is not a project I wish to undertake. There are sites, Wizard of Vegas is one of them, where listing the best gambling songs would probably make for an active thread. Maybe somebody would undertake a project to make such a CD or even a DVD. It's not going to be me. It's going to be you, Richard?
No, I know nothing about gambling songs. And
you got to know when to hold them and
yeah,
know when
I've
to
Yeah, I've heard that one. But yeah. And we could have a discussion sometime about gambling movies, but gambling songs I know nothing about. And most of the movies, you know, when you see these discussions about gambling movies, uh-huh. Most of the movies people talk about are not gambling movies in my book. Like Casino, to me, is not a gambling movie. It's a Vegas movie, but not a gambling movie. But
Rounders.
Rounders is a gambling movie. Hangover is a Vegas movie.
And Cincinnati Kid.
So that's a gambling movie. There you go. But, yeah. So, I just watched, actually, just apropos of nothing, I did just watch Mississippi Grind on Netflix. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a gambling movie. And normally, I'm not prone to watching movies about degenerate gamblers or alcoholics, for that matter. I just find them really kind of depressing. But anyway, I thought the movie was really good. And it's very much in the vein of California Split, if you've ever seen that movie, which is a gambling movie.
Doesn't sound like a Vegas movie.
No, they go to Reno, but yeah. Anyway, so people, if you want to check out Mississippi Grind on Netflix, check that out.
Very good. Thank you, Richard. In the early part of the show, thank you, Vagabond. And send us in your question, folks. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Bye-bye.